The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. We've got something special for you today. We've got a guest host. If you want to say hello and your name and anything else you would like to say.
Hey, I'm Marcia. I'm an old friend of Patrick and Ruben's. What's up?
Yep. It's our good friend Marcia. And she's going to be joining us in a discussion of 1999's Beau Travail, directed by Claire Denis. But before we do that, would you guys like to play a game?
Yes. Sure. Let's play a game.
All right. So the way this game works, if you've ever listened to Doug Love's Movies, you know this game. But he certainly doesn't own a patent on it, hopefully. But I put out the name of an actor, actress, or director, and then we name as many movies as we can think of with that person either in it or directing it. And the last person to think of one wins. We'll let Marcia go first because she's new. And then so it'll go Marcia, me, Patrick, Basil. Right? And so that I could participate, what I did was I just took the 20 leads from last year's top 20 highest grossing films, and I'm going to put them in a randomizer, randomize it, and we'll play the game. Sandra Bullock was the lead in two of last year's top 20 grossing films, so I put George Clooney in there because he was the second lead in one of her films.
Yeah.
So there could still be 20.
Yeah. But,
all right, so the names are in a list. I'm going to hit randomize. It's the top one. There's like three or four that I don't think I could name a single movie besides the one from last year that they were in. So let's hope it's none of them. Ah! It's Sandra Bullock.
Yay!
What's up?
All right, Marcia, start us off.
Oh, God. The heat.
Gravity.
Oh, okay. You go next.
We're going in the same order that we go for the count.
28 days.
While you were sleeping.
To you, Marcia.
Oh, Gravity.
No, I said that one.
What?
You said that already.
What else was she in last year? The Heat? And then...
That's the one you said.
No, it is.
But you can name any of her films. They don't have to be from last year.
I'm just so terrible at this sort of thing. wasn't she in that football movie?
Yeah. What's the name?
Oh, what are any of their names? I don't know. I don't remember the name.
Are you out? Are you out?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the blind side?
Oh, no. Miss Congeniality.
Miss Congeniality. Okay, I say the blind side. Patrick?
Okay. All About Steve.
Miss Congeniality 2.
Hey. Yeah. That was mine. Okay, I'm out now for real.
She was in Speed.
Yeah, I was going to say Speed. And Speed 2, Cruise Control.
Love Potion number 9.
Was she in...
You shouldn't say anything yet because it's not your turn.
Oh, man.
Wait until I give up.
Just say something outrageous. Like, was she in Lawrence of Arabia?
Yes. She was indeed in that. Oh, Demolition Man.
Yeah. There was a movie, I think it was called, like, Practical Magic or something like that, where she was a witch. I can't remember if that was her or somebody else who reminded me of her, though.
I don't think that's the name either.
It is practical magic, and that makes me really angry because that was going to be mine.
Okay,
that was yours. Okay, yeah.
Damn it! Oh shit.
I feel like we're missing a lot of recent movies.
Yeah.
Because she's in a movie every year.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's true.
There's going to be a lot of angry Sandra Bullock fans.
If we were doing this in front of a live audience like Doug Loves Movies, at the end, they all scream out the answers that we forgot to make fun of us.
It's Patrick's turn.
Oh, is it my turn?
No, it would be mine if you're saying
Ruben's,
no.
Yeah, I think it's Ruben's turn.
Did you say a movie or did you say you don't have one?
I said The Proposal.
Oh, okay.
With Ryan Reynolds. Geez. The Proposal.
I'm trying to think of the name of the movie that she won a Razzie for, but I can't remember it.
That was All About Steve. That was the one I said earlier.
Oh, okay. Man, you think I'd know more Sandra Bullock movies than this? Yeah, I'm out.
I feel like there was another romantic comedy with her, like it was like a working relationship thing, like similar to The Proposal. Was it 2 weeks' Notice, or is that?
Yeah, that's her.
That's her.
Yeah,
that's her. Okay, yeah. Okay. Nice. I don't remember if that was Jennifer Lopez or her.
Jennifer Lopez similar. Was in the one where she's a party planner, wedding planner.
But the wedding planner, yeah, and Made in Manhattan.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Lake House? Is that the name of the Keanu Reeves one?
Oh, that's right.
Yep. Oh man, I'm looking at the list and I can't believe some of these ones that I forgot.
The Lake House.
There's like a zillion of them.
According to Letterboxd, there is 44.
44 whole movies with Sandra Bullock in them that I cannot think of right now.
Not 44 left.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously.
It's like
you can't remember
20,
any of the ones we named either.
28.
It's true. It's true. I don't remember what I've said already. I think I'm out. I don't think I can think of any more Sandra Bullock movies.
All right, Basil's the winner.
All right.
Basil is the winner.
I'm so glad I remembered The Lake House. I was trying to think of it forever.
We all forgot Crash.
Oh, right.
Because none of us saw it.
She was in that. I forgot about that. She was the
extremely loud and incredibly close.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know she was
in
Time to Kill.
Yeah. This is the one that I'm upset about forgetting is The Net, because I probably saw it like 10 times when I was 16.
Oh, yeah, me too. That was my mom's like favorite movie for some reason for a little while.
And
then a bunch of movies that I don't think that I would have ever remembered, like Forces of Nature, Murder by Numbers, the remake of The Vanishing.
The Prince of Egypt.
Yeah.
Oh, she did a voice for that one. Okay.
Oh, I watched A Time to Kill a whole bunch of times when I was a kid. But
yeah. A Time to Kill and The Net are the ones that I feel like I should have remembered.
I totally should have remembered The Net, too.
All right, well, that was fun.
Just for the ridiculous internet logic in that movie.
Maybe next podcast I'll do a Leonard Maltin game, even though that means that I can't play. All right, so back to Beau Travail. That's the movie that we watched for this week. It has
Enough
nothing to do with Sandra Bullock. Beau Travail is a movie directed by Claire Denis, and it is about a group of French legionnaires, in particular one named Galoup, played by Denis Levant, who is kind of the, I don't know about military ranks, but he is in charge of this group of privates, and then he has one guy above him who also oversees him over the course of the movie, and a new recruit arrives. What's his name?
It's Sartan. Like
Sartan.
Sartan, yeah, I think.
Sartan, I think.
Sartan.
And I can't remember the name of that actor, but he was in Olivier. And Levant, just even though he gets along really well with all of the other soldiers, Levant just sort of indiscriminately hates him. And there's probably kind of like a homoerotic sexual undercurrent to that, like, hate and jealousy. And eventually Levant, you know, just sort of, like, drives him out of the Legionnaire group. In fact, he punishes him by sending him to the middle of the desert with a faulty compass. And Satan almost dies, and the movie is sort of told from the perspective of Galoop's memories. He's in Paris awaiting to be court-martialed for his actions, and he's, like, sort of remembering what happened when he was there and telling his memories. So that's the plot, and I just wanted to say also that the reason why I chose this one as part of sort of a mini theme, which is called Second Chances. I gave a group of movies that I had seen a long time ago and disliked, and I wanted to revisit them and see whether or not I liked them, because I did this recently with The Thin Red Line, and I liked it a lot more than I did before. So I used to hate this movie, but we'll see whether or not I still hate it when we get around to my opinion of it. But, Patrick is next.
I will say that I liked this movie okay. I, for the longest time, like, didn't really understand. Well, I still don't really understand, like, why Galoop exactly hates Satan. I didn't exactly understand, like, what his big deal was with this guy. I didn't really understand what made him any different from any of the other Legionnaires, because they all acted and looked pretty similar, even though they were all, this was something that was interesting, they were all different races and ethnicities and nationalities, but they all had a very similar look to them. They were all, like, you know, like, bald, muscular, like, super, super, you know, sweaty, buff military dudes. And so I had trouble telling a lot of them apart sometimes, even though they were all different.
I would say they're straight out of a multiracial Leni Riefenstahl movie. It's like if Leni Riefenstahl wasn't, like, an inveterate racist.
Yeah. But I thought that was kind of interesting. That was, like, I don't know if Claire Denis did that on purpose, like, to kind of flip the whole, like, you know, people of a certain nationality all look the same on its head, where it's like people of all different nationalities kind of look the same in this. But I just, the main problem that I have with it was I didn't understand the motivation of Galoop for hating him. And I also didn't understand why the guy up higher than Galoop liked him, because he seemed to, that's the title of the film, Beau Travail. I think it means nice catch, or that's how it's
good work.
Or good work, is that it was translated as nice catch or nice find when I saw it. So
literally it means good work.
I, you know, I just thought that that was, like,
Travail might have
weird that I
don't
didn't,
know. Yeah, I've only ever heard it translated as work, but there might be some kind of colloquial.
Well, I remember he says it in the movie. He says the word Travail, and it was translated as find, and so I was like, huh. So that's interesting, but it could be work. I mean, work, fine, whatever. Whatever it's translated as, it.
I can only tell you the literal translation.
Yeah, I didn't understand why Galoop hated him and why his superior, who I think his name is Fortier or
Forestier. Also, Bruno. Okay. Bruno. He's calling Bruno if you want.
Okay.
It's a good name.
I didn't understand why he liked the guy, and I didn't understand why Galoop hated him. So that was my main problem with it. But other than that, I thought it was pretty well done.
Forestier, by the way, is the same name and the same actor as a role in the movie Le Petit Soldat by Godard. Just so you know.
FYI.
Interesting.
I would say I'm sort of on the fence with this movie. Like, there are things I liked about it, but then there are also things I didn't like. And I think the main thing that I didn't like was just that I thought Levant's treatment of Satan was just, like, too on the nose and too, like, like it seemed like out of a different movie, like a more regular movie, for him to be like so like douchey and like malicious to him, that like it felt a little to me like Denis was hitting it on the nose, as opposed to the much more oblique aspect of like almost everything else about the movie. And I also didn't like that it was shot on digital in 1999, because it had like that really weird like 30 frames per second like digital sheen to it that was really distracting to me for almost the whole movie. And on to Marcia.
Hey, I actually agree about the point about it being shot on digital, because I'm going to say something that I hate being said about movies, but it was really pretty, which is usually an excuse for a movie not being good in other ways. But in this case, I think it helps add to the movie. But yeah, to me, it seemed like a movie about military life and military aspirations and military imposing a structure on a life that's otherwise not structured. Because for the first like 40 minutes, I was waiting for it to be about anything at all. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess this is the point. So that's my short
Did you
summary.
Like it? Not like it?
I did like it. It was very homoerotic, like you said, probably. Like, it was very, like, it looked like it was shot. It looked like it was an advertisement for a perfume, like one of those Christmas advertisements. Where people are like running around before, in waves.
Before I rewatched it, like a couple weeks ago, I mentioned to Basil that I thought it was the closest I had ever seen to a film capturing objectification of men.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think it does capture objectification of men and women, because there's that one scene. I mean, I should leave that to the free discussion, I guess.
If you want,
it's about
pretty freeform podcast.
Yeah, well, there's this one scene where all these native girls are standing in front of a mirror at a club, and they're all occupying their own space, you know, and they're all together.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden the lights flash off and back on, and there's all these sailors in between them, like taking away their space, pushing them around, getting up on them.
I really liked that scene.
Oh, it was terrifying.
The Legionnaires like come out of the darkness behind them and
yeah.
like start
and then all of a sudden
them.
All these white hats are bobbing around.
I know. I was like, this is a good scene.
The soundtrack actually helped a lot to add to that weird horror. Like, the whole time the main character's convinced that something bad's gonna happen. But that soundtrack was just almost too much.
Another sort of fun fact about the film is that so it's loosely based on the short novel Billy Budd by Herman Melville, and much of the soundtrack comes from an opera about Billy Budd. So
okay.
Another
I noticed that in the credits that when it was listing the songs that it said Billy Budd, and I was like, oh, that makes sense, because that book is all about like weird homoeroticism in the military. So.
Okay, so this was my second viewing. The first time I saw it was in college, so that was like 8 years ago, because my friend Colin loved it, and I hated it then, and I love it now. And I would say what's most interesting to me about it is that the first time that I watched it, that I thought it was like extremely serious, and that I kind of felt like it was obvious and serious in a way in which, like, I went into it being like, oh, this is a great film. And I think when I was, like, 21, if I watched a film that someone told me was great, they, like, I assumed that it had to be, like, really serious. Just because it was great. I don't know if funny or silly is the right word, but this movie was a lot more humorous than I remembered and expected it to be. Like, so we were just talking about the title, which is, the literal translation is good work, and no work is accomplished in this movie whatsoever. Like, the entire movie is people digging holes in the literally in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that is true.
And there's another scene where they like invade an empty building, and some of those other local women are like standing there just laughing at them because it's really ridiculous what they're doing. It's just a bunch of military exercises performed when there's no war or anything to be fought. Like, I think kind of what Patrick was saying about like the interracial nature of the group is important, because it's kind of like this is like a post-colonial world in a way. It's like these people are no longer fighting, they're no longer enemies, they're all, it's all races and creeds or whatever just sort of working together, and so there's nobody to fight, so they're just kind of like, there's a scene where what they're doing, I have no idea what they're practicing, but they run at each other and then grab each other in like this really fierce masculine hug.
They're having like hugging exercises.
And so while I wasn't like overtly like laughing at the film, I realized that it was a lot more playful, I guess, than I originally thought it was. And it made me like it a lot more. I'll say one more instance before we move on to whatever. But there's so right before or right when Galoop is taking Satan out to the desert, there's like this really intense POV shot from like the truck that they're in, and like everyone is like staring at him, and they're all like really deeply sad that Satan, who's like their favorite person, is you know, leaving, and they don't know what's going to happen. And it's like got, you know, that handheld quality because they're in the back of the truck. It's like really jumpy, and it like really captures the emotions of the moment. And then it cuts to a wide shot of the truck, and the truck could not be going any slower. Like, literally, like, the people who are, like, slowly walking in the background are way passing the truck. and I laughed really hard. It's supposed to be this super serious moment. And it's, like, really... Okay. Anyways, let's talk about the film in general. But I was really surprised that this movie was a lot goofier than I remembered.
Just to add on to that, I laughed really hard at the part where, like, they're, like, sort of in a weird pyramid, just, like, in their underwear, ironing their pants, like, in unison.
And he keeps telling them that they have to get the perfect crease.
Just right.
Yeah. I also thought that there's several scenes of them doing exercises where you're just like, what the hell kind of an exercise is this? Where it's just, like, there's one where they're just, like, holding their arms up in the air, and then there's one where they're just, like, they just like flop back on their backs and just hold their arms out, and I'm like, what the hell kind of exercise is this? And then the one you were talking about where they're having like hugging exercises where they're just like, just like, here's the hardest hug I can give you. It was just like, yeah, and like you said, the just like breaking rocks in the middle of nowhere, just like, what are they even doing? People are just like riding by, just like looking at them like, what are they doing? I think it's interesting.
Rosenbaum said that the women are kind of like a Greek chorus to the film, and that they're like constantly responding to like the ridiculousness of the soldiers in different ways.
Yeah, I like the part when one of the African women just like throws a rock at the truck while it's, and kind of laughs.
Yeah, that was the best.
Yeah, that was at the camera. I thought that was funny. It's like the truck that the camera is on. She just like throws a rock at that truck with the camera on it, because there are no other characters in that scene. It's just the. And I thought that was funny that they left that in the movie.
Or it was intentional.
I thought that it was interesting that you brought up like post-colonialism, though, because okay, this is something that I heard about her other movie, White Material, which is, I guess, I don't know how many of her films take place in Africa, but I know White Material also takes place in Africa. And
so does Chocolat.
And that one is a lot about colonialism. But here, she does something that she does in that movie, too, where she has, like, a really popular brand, pretty, like... front and center in a frame. Like, there's one frame where they show this building and it's just got these huge signs for Coke and Sprite on it. And then there's another scene where somebody's like drinking a Fanta, and I was just like, I was wondering, like, I'm not sure exactly what her meaning is behind showing these huge brands, but I know it probably has something to do with colonialism. And, you know, I guess kind of a, what you said was this was post-colonial, but I think in a way it's almost like a passive colonialism. Like, it's these brands are still being kind of imposed on these people, even though there's not, like, a military rule being imposed on them anymore.
As far as, like, her movies being, like, in Africa and about colonialism and stuff, she was raised in Africa for a lot of her life. And Chocolat, which is the most of those movies, is, like, pretty overt and also fairly autobiographical.
35 Shots of Rum also takes place in Africa. So a huge chunk of her films, basically.
Takes place in Africa. Okay. As you remember, I attended a
lecture. And her life.
Yeah.
To me, the diversification of the soldiers didn't feel so much as post-colonial as it did like they had been made into the colonial power. Like, they had all been subsumed into the colonial power. And they were still facing the other, which was the native people in the area. Because everyone's bodies were so much the same. Like, it felt like, I don't know.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I did think that was interesting. Although, Galoop is, I guess, the most different looking of everybody. Because he's like, he's almost kind of shriveled
in a
way.
He's short, yeah. I think it's important really that he mentions that Satan was slim, slender. He mentioned that he had his physical presence. I mean, I think it's understandable that he was jealous. Dude was shaking things up.
He's definitely the most sexified of all the guys.
Yeah.
There's like that one shot where he's like kind of like standing shirtless and like brooding a little bit. And I was like, whoa, he's looking good.
I thought there was an interesting thing that they do at the beginning of the film where they're showing the shot of their shadows on the ground, and the shadows look very sort of like slender and feminine almost. They're like really like curvy, weird shadows, but then it pans up and it's just like these shirtless like men just like holding their arms up in the air, and I was just like, that's a really interesting juxtaposition of imagery right there, because the shadow of these guys looks so different from the actual view of them.
Watching this movie came at a fun and interesting time, because for my film theory class, we just finished reading like the very first like feminist film theory essay, which is called like Narrative and Visual Pleasure. It's by Laura Mulvey. And it's interesting because this movie seems to be like kind of directly addressing a whole bunch of the stuff that she talks about. Like, one of them is that like that there's different ways of like looking in film, and that usually like looking involves looking like she's basically the person putting forth the idea of the male gaze, so that like the camera looks at women, and then we also like look at men looking at women, and that this movie like kind of takes that in the opposite degree, where we see like almost all the examples of it, like we're looking at the men a whole lot, but there's also like weird shots of like Bruno staring at the men while they're exercising. That's really like unsettling. Like in that weird hugging thing, I was also confused about that one. I was like, why are they doing that? But then there's like a short insert shot of just like Bruno's face, and it looks like he's just like staring at them.
And
in my mind, I was like, oh, he just made them do that because he wanted to watch them.
Yeah,
do
he likes
that.
What he sees.
To go back a bit, I guess, and just to talk about Leni Riefenstahl, who I guess for those who don't know, was like shot this movie called Olympia, which is technically a documentary about the Berlin Olympics, but like the first hour and a half is just like shots of like perfect bodies flexing and stuff like that. I wouldn't call this movie a takedown of Leni Riefenstahl exactly, but there was like, I feel like there's a ridiculousness placed on like Dennis, on Galoop's insecurity, and like the way that like he looks at the bodies and compares himself to it, and like fails in comparison. That, like, looking at people and, like, wanting them to be, like, this perfect form or whatever is, like, I don't know. I felt like there was a goofiness to it. And I don't know if we want to skip directly to the end, but I think it's kind of important that Galoop is the most talented of them at any specific thing, which in this case is dancing. He's actually a really incredible dancer. and none of the rest of them ever do anything.
Yeah.
In terms of dancing. They just sort of stand around and look handsome, and Satan saves a guy once, like, from a crashed helicopter.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Do you guys want to talk about the ending?
That was an
at
interesting
all?
Way the to shoot a helicopter crash.
Like, Galoop is like laying in bed with a gun, and maybe he's going to kill himself. And then it cuts to a scene that's a memory, or maybe something from earlier at the African disco with just Galoop by himself, and he's just going crazy dancing to Rhythm of the Night, and the credits start to roll. Yeah.
With his hand in his pocket.
I really liked that. That was a cool scene. I was like, oh, this is nice. There's a cool dance scene at the end of this movie.
I feel like it's the same thing with having Coke and Sprite on the buildings, having that song at the very end, kind of tying it all together.
Having that kind of, like, passive colonial influence.
Referencing back to having a global culture.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And there's also, I mean, I think it's also important that they're, like, the room is just, like, full of mirrors, so he's, like, not only dancing, but, like, watching himself dance and, like, feels pretty happy about it. Like, he's like,
and
yeah,
it's,
I'm
it's
good
empty.
At this.
Every time we've seen that room otherwise in the film, it's been shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
With women.
Yeah. I thought
the new colonialism is the melting pot. Just building off what you said.
Yeah, I like the beginning of the film because it starts out with, like, the French Legionnaires kind of singing a Legionnaire song, but then you don't even see them, you just see sort of like this painting on a wall, and then it cuts directly to this I don't know what language it's in, but this pop song with this like kiss kiss sound effect in it. It's like mwah, mwah, like that, and it's like doo, 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 doo. Everybody's dancing to it, and I was like, wow, that's a really interesting cut from like military singing to this.
And I thought the second time that we see the disco was like, it's like showing the women through this like mirror that's all fractured apart, and the way they're just like staring right back at the mirror was really like confrontational and awesome in a way that, like, you know, it felt like it didn't let you objectify them as much as normal because they're like looking right back at you. Like, usually women dancing in a club would be like a sexy scene, but Claire Denis made it super not sexy, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Made it super creepy.
Well, I think it's interesting, when I saw the women staring at themselves dancing, I was like, yeah. But then when I saw the dude at the end staring at himself dancing, I got that feeling like that scene from American Psycho where he's flexing, you know, when he's having sex that girl. That's what I felt from that scene.
One interpretation I read of the ending is that that's actually like he commits suicide, and that's like his death moment. Is that's him dying, metaphorically him dying. Galoop at the end there.
His heaven is watching himself dance in a disco.
Which is, I mean, it makes sense like narratively and structurally, but it would be the first time that I'd ever seen like a suicide death represented like that excitedly, I guess, or that energetically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, even that scene seems way less serious than it could be. Like, when he lays down on the bed, he's wearing these, like, weird flip-flops that are, like, bright red. And
remember that,
just that,
yeah.
Like, small... Like he could just be not wearing any shoes, but the fact that he's wearing flip-flops just, like, took any dramatic power out of the fact that he also has a gun to me.
And what did his tattoo say? That was the first time we got to read his tattoo.
Yeah, it
was the thing he said earlier.
Yeah, it was like, do good work and die, or something like that.
Yeah.
I guess that's part of the...
Is there any good work left in this world? Any good work to do? Or is it just meaningless exercises?
Just dancing. That's it. Just dancing.
And homoeroticism?
Having underwater knife fights in your undies.
Yeah, that a lot of those military exercises felt like they were just like boys kind of playing around with like different... It felt like they were doing like different kind of Hollywood stereotypes. Like there's one part where they're running with their rifles and they're like doing like hiding behind pillars and stuff like that. Like they're in an action movie. And then the knife fight, the underwater knife fight reminded me of like James Bond, because that feels like something you see in like all the James Bond movies. It's like there's an underwater fight scene and he's got a knife and he's, you know, going after the guy. And I was just like, this feels really like weirdly playful.
I think my favorite one was the circle where the main character was like, oh, oh, and they were all like circling in on him, like they were going to attack him. Like, what? But that was the only scene where you saw how much smaller he was than everyone else.
Yeah, a lot of those exercises were kind of weirdly playful. There's one where they're like, it's almost like the red light, green light game, where the guy will be like, he'll be like, at ease, attention, at ease, attention, and they'll like jump to attention real quick. It was like they were playing the game.
The sort of inverse of that, where like Levant is trying to like show off and like telling them to do different kinds of push-ups, and like no one can keep up. But obviously, oh, yeah, it's like unfair. But he knows what he's gonna say before. Anyone else.
And he's
does.
Also kind of showing off too. Like he's pushing himself off the ground when he does each push-up.
Yeah.
So that's kind of weirdly show-offy of him.
I thought going back to like the exercises, the very first one, the time that we see it, I wrote it down because it was really interesting to me. Like, there's like the music that sort of sounds like ritualistic music, and then the first guy we see is like a black guy in this like sort of qigong pose thing. But like, there's an easy way, like based on how the movie built up, to like think like, oh, it's like some African guy doing some ritual thing. But then like the camera pans, and there's like a bunch of other dudes, and it's just like the military guys standing around. And I was like, oh, that was a good way to play on my cultural expectations, Claire Denis.
I don't really have a point about it, but another part that I thought was really funny was when Galoop and like Satan like reach ahead for some reason, in terms of like being like upset at each other, and they start circling each other and like getting closer and closer, like to their faces each time, and the music is getting like so intense, like way over the top intense, and they're like really, really close to kissing, like so close.
Yes.
And the music,
one of them
like,
had been female. Wasn't there another shot where two men got so close that they looked like they were almost kissing? Wasn't it Bruno and? But no,
I can't
that was
remember that, one.
That circling scene was a scene that I laughed at.
So much of this movie is so fun. I don't know, like, how do other people feel? I already mentioned that I wasn't that into it, but like, it felt like there was some weird sort of erotic but also paternal feeling going on between Bruno and Galoop, and that he was like jealous of his affections for Santan, and like that was like kind of it. Like, it was like pretty obvious, and I was like, okay, I get it. And then like the way it plays out in the movie, it felt like too transparent to me, but I don't know if anyone else had that issue.
My main issue was that it never really explains any of that. It never really gives you any reason why everybody sort of likes Satan so much, and why Galoop hates him. Because
he's
so
the best
much.
Looking.
I mean, honestly, like, I had trouble telling him apart from everybody else. I didn't consider him even the best looking of the group.
Who did you consider the best looking of the group?
Honestly, like, they all look pretty similarly good to me. Like, that was the thing, is like, I couldn't tell them apart, mostly.
Was Satan supposed to be Russian? Or was that another person?
No, that was a different guy.
Okay. But no.
So apparently you had the same issue.
I got that read from Bruno and... What's the main character's name?
Galoop.
I got that read from Bruno and Galoop and Satan. But to me, it wasn't as transparent as all that. I wasn't like, oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of knew what was going on because I read like a plot synopsis of it. And it was like, you know, I knew that he was jealous of him for, you know, his superior liking him so much. But I didn't understand, like, the reasoning behind it. Like,
his superior said he wasn't a moral man, right?
A good reason for him to be like, jealous of him.
I'm assuming they're hinting at things.
I guess I didn't really fully understand the relationship between him and Forestier either.
They met in the middle of the night. He lit his cigarette.
Yeah, there was definitely something in his narration at the beginning, too, that was like that he'd been stationed there or like lost reputation because of like some controversy, and that's all he says. But I thought the implication was pretty obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, I just didn't. I don't know.
What
you guys
find.
Keep breaking up for me, so I don't really like. I'm not hearing like everything you're saying.
Yeah, I'm having the same problem, Ruben. My computer keeps like just freezing in the middle of stuff, so I don't know if everybody's hearing everything I'm saying, but I'm not hearing everything everybody else is saying. Also, so
hopefully we're on this boat together.
Yep. Yeah. Well, hopefully our recorders are hearing everything wrong.
Yeah.
Well, that's the most important.
We'll have a complete recording. It's some of it I'm not sure then. We'll be responding to what the other person was saying. Well,
so I read a brief synopsis, and it said that Satan and Galoop were fighting over a woman, and that is absolutely not what happened in the film. So that synopsis
not at all.
Needs to die.
That was very like optimistic.
She was like a red herring.
Yeah, the woman's in it for like 2 seconds.
Yeah. <She's>
like a moment of gay panic for that reviewer. Like, no, yeah. They're probably all straight.
Fighting over that chick. Does the French army really wear that short of shorts? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Are those standard issues?
They're not the French army.
The Legion.
The French Foreign Legion would be a private organization, right? That's paid to do like mercenaries.
I don't know.
I think
that.
So. I can look it up. French Legionnaires.
It's just like holy smokes.
This is the yes, we've gotten to the Googling portion of our podcast. It always comes.
Come up with a theme song for it.
Apparently
it's part of the French army.
But yeah, those short shorts with those really tall socks, I was pretty impressed with them every time they showed up.
Let's look at some images of actual French Foreign Legion wear.
This is great for a podcast.
I remember this was 1999, so different time then.
Looking at pictures.
They might have shortened the shorts even more. So.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not really seeing anything where they're dressed like... I see ones where they're dressed just how you would expect a soldier to be dressed, like in all pants and long shirts with all camo and stuff.
Kind of like they were in the battle scene.
Yeah.
Nothing where they're scene. in any shorts. I think it's funny that one of the images among the French Foreign Legion Google search is an image from Beau Travail.
Nice. I wonder what they think of it.
They're probably like, yeah.
And it's an image of them hugging.
There you go.
From the hug scene.
We know how to give hugs.
Who can hug the best?
Super hugs.
Manly hugs. Anger hugs.
We know how to give super hugs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't remember the last time Basil talked about it, but his point about it being sort of obvious in certain ways. I didn't really think about it. Now that he brings it up, I would agree that it's correct. but the movie, like, tonally was so enjoyable to me in so many different ways that, like, it could move pretty seamlessly from something that was, like, pretty strikingly beautiful and, like, a poetic way to something that was fairly goofy and funny. Like, I don't really see many movies like that, I guess. And so, to me, that was a really enjoyable, like, you don't find that many kind of, like, poetic movies that are willing to, like, make fun of themselves, I guess.
Yeah. That's a fair point. I think the only scene that, like, really struck me as, like, being out of place was the one that, like, eventually sets off the whole thing, where, like, that guy goes to church, like, sneaks away to go to church, and then, like, Galoop makes him dig in that hole until his hands are, like, bleeding and stuff. And I was like, this feels like from a different movie. This is, like, pretty awful.
Yeah.
But
it felt like a different movie, that scene, for me, because it was so action-y. There was stuff happening, you know, there were plot points.
Character motivation.
Yeah.
And a slow motion punch.
Right. True.
It was like really,
really slow.
Was it? It felt like they didn't actually do slow motion. It felt like they just had the actors move really slow.
Yeah,
that's what it looked like totally to me.
I was that
just
is
like,
correct.
They were just like, they were just like, move really slow. We're not going to shoot it in slow motion. Just move really slow.
The director is a woman.
Yeah, yes. Claire Denis.
I noticed she's a fan of that shot that comes from behind the ear, but you're not looking at what the character's looking at. You're looking at him looking at something off the screen. That was all you did, is watch that guy watch something off the screen, principally. So most of the shots of that guy in the movie.
Yeah. There were a couple of times, too, I noticed where she's just sort of, like, completely ignores the rules of normal filmmaking, or she has characters who will just stare directly into the camera, just like not in a, like, it doesn't seem a planned way, but just like the actor will just kind of like look over and just like look into the camera like they weren't ready for the scene to start or something like that.
I actually wondered if the dialogue was one of those where they were like, hit this point and this point, but you don't have a script, or if it was scripted.
Maybe. I mean, it certainly didn't feel like it was, like, structured in that way, except for the scenes that kind of, I guess, drive the plot.
Yeah.
And Galoop's narration, too, is very obviously scripted.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I just felt like they had the actors just sort of go at it. And, I mean, I don't even know, they don't even really seem like actors, most of them, except for Levant and the one you said that plays Satan.
I can't talk about anybody else, but the big three are definitely actors and like
Forestier.
Pretty famous.
The other ones don't really seem like they're actors. They just seem like they're just like really muscular dudes that they cast for it.
Yeah. This is the first movie that I've seen.
Except for the big three.
Yeah.
Denny Levant and where it acknowledges that he's pretty weird looking. Like,
yeah.
Apparently, I haven't seen any of them. I think you have. Apparently, he's like the handsome male lead in a lot of Leos Carax's films.
Really?
He's actually the handsome, the quote unquote handsome lead in all of them.
The main character.
Like, he's actually just like, basically, and a lot of times he's named Alex, which is Leos Carax's real name. So he's just like a pretty blatant stand in for Carax himself. But. Yeah, he's apparently they're both pretty short too. So that
He's definitely short.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I've seen him in more than one movie, and like usually he's just like dating really attractive women, or like any other movie with like movie actor where there's like a pretty wide double standard for what's acceptable for men and women. So it's interesting to see a movie that finally was like, yeah, this guy's kind of weird looking. Like,
yeah, seriously.
But
it took a female director to point that out. She's like, this guy's weird looking.
I think he's attractive, though. I do think he's weird looking, but I was into him.
I mean, yeah, I've never thought of like somebody being odd looking as being a negative most of the time. Because I mean,
I was into all of them.
It's yeah. good. Well, yeah. But I mean, it's good to have like some sort of defining characteristics. Like, I feel like people who are just like, you're just like pretty aren't as interesting to look at as people who have like weird things going on. Where you're like, huh, they have a very interesting face. Like, I think I was taught, well, I was like going back and forth. I think it was you. Was it you, Ruben, that was talking about Kate Mara? Where I was like, she has, like, you were talking about how Rooney Mara is very attractive. Like, she's very traditionally attractive. But Kate Mara has, like, this weird thing going on where she's not exactly traditionally attractive.
All I said was that I like Rooney Mara.
She's certainly attractive, but she has a weird kind of attractiveness going on. And
The rest of the conversation happened for you and you alone.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good, because I didn't want anybody to know about me. So, anyway, point being, weirdness can be attractive.
Well, and the forgettability of attractiveness. We all commented on that. Like, all the soldiers, they're just, like, attractive dudes. Yeah, yeah. Even though they're diverse, they're kind of forgettable. Because they're just like, oh, man, that one's a 9 on 10, too. Go him.
Well, the only reason I could... Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, I don't have a real big problem with Denis Levant, but... My girlfriend Betsy does. She's like, oh, it's that ugly guy again. And we just watched a movie with him.
Which one is he?
the main character.
Galoob. You know what? He looks like Rip Torn's younger cousin or something.
That was all I basically had to say. Was that my girlfriend finds him so unappealing to look at that she didn't watch this movie with me. But I don't have a big problem.
Maybe he's for men only attractiveness.
Right.
He's not bad. He's not. He's no Satan.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, no, that's true. And I have a movie on my watch list from him when Satan was like really young, and like I'd only seen the cover, and I was like, oh, that's the same guy, except for now he's a man, and then he was a boy.
Yeah, the Boy Meets Girl plays up his boyish lookingness like a whole lot. Like the whole movie, he's like drinking milk when everyone else is drinking booze.
I was talking about the other guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, you broke up for a second during the voice thing. But yeah, Levant also looked very young and boyish in his early acting career.
No, that's not boyish. He's literally a child.
He's literally a child.
And this other movie that I want to see, it's from like 7 years.
Well, he looks boyish still. Yeah.
It's from like 7 years earlier, so he's like 16 or 14 or something.
Fair enough.
So the salt fields were really pretty?
Yeah.
How about the salt fields?
Also horrifying.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my god, the number one thing you don't want to run across when you're stranded in the desert with no water. It's like, here's all this salt. Like,
And here's some water. Salt water.
Oh, man.
Yeah, when he was laying in it, I was like, God, that seems like the most horrible thing.
Jesus. He's dying of thirst and he's laying in salt. Like, how dry can your skin get? Just like shriveling up, just like, ugh.
But there's so much water at the beginning of the film. Like, I'm not normally one for like, oh, beans. But at the beginning, you stare at water for like 15 seconds straight.
It's true. There was some water going on there. Little ocean shot.
Yeah. I
found a lot of. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say something not related to anything you guys were saying, so you should finish your thoughts.
Oh, wait. No, I just want to say that by coincidence, like, the movie that I watched earlier in the day, yesterday, is a documentary called Araya, which is all about South American salt workers, like, mining salt.
Really?
So, there was a lot of salt in my movie going yesterday.
A lot of salt in your
movie diet. And it looked similarly horrible. They're, like, standing, like, ankle deep in salt, like, all day, just, like, wet salt.
You should maybe watch some low sodium films to <That's true. laughs> balance it out.
Yeah, I was just saying that there were a lot of images that were evocative for me. Yeah, Satan Lane and the Salt was one of them. But also sort of like the guy riding, like there was like a montage between him riding and like waves, and it was like halfway between both shots.
Oh, I remember that.
What Basil was talking about earlier about like the women like looking into the mirror and like how like defiant they looked. Like I really remember the one like lead woman's face who's like in front and like how she was like, "You looking at me? I'm looking at you. You look at me? I'm gonna look at you." I really like that. I don't know. I just really like this movie.
Yeah, I feel like I probably would have liked it a whole lot more if it was shot on film. But like the digital look of it, like I don't know. It's like a weird quibble that I have. And maybe it's not even fair, but it's really distracting for my eyes, like, the whole time. But
I don't notice things.
I wish I didn't notice this, because it makes it feel unfair when I'm watching, like, I should be like, yeah, that's cool. You're, like, experimenting with digital before it's even really, like, popular yet, and, like... You're making a movie on a low budget. You don't even have to show a helicopter explode. Way to go.
Yeah.
That made me laugh really hard when it's just like a weird like smoke and then there's like pieces of wreckage in the water and then he's like dragging him away.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was funny. It was like a crash noise, but then there was just like blood in the water and I was like, oh, that's an interesting way to shoot something. And they were like, a helicopter crash. And I was like, they did that because they didn't have the budget to show a helicopter crashing. And I was like, whatever. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with... Oh, go ahead.
It makes it funnier to me, but...
I wish it were more surreal. It kind of walked that line where it was kind of surreal, but I wish it had gone full-blown, just jumped over the edge.
All right. Well, then you should watch L'Entrée.
Yeah, L'Entrée's more disconnected and surreal. Sure.
L'Entrée is the movie where someone is looking at a picture of a boat and then it just cuts to a boat and it's an entirely different point in time.
Awesome.
And the stories of the characters.
Awesome.
Yeah, when you're talking about shots that you like, I wrote down one where there's like at night they're walking in the alley and like there's like a car just driving up behind them, and at first it seems like an aesthetic kind of thing where they're just like walking and there's lights behind them, but then the car like starts honking and then they laugh. <'Cause they're> just, like...
you start thinking about the practicality and you're like, oh, they're in their way. I thought it was funny too, like after they get out of that one car's way, they just close back in on the road and they're in front of the next car and you're like, you're just going to have to get out of the way of that car too.
Yeah, so when I watched her, when I watched this film of Claire Denise in college, I thought she was super serious. And then I watched L'Entrée a couple years later, and I really liked, I also watched Trouble Every Day, and I watched L'Entrée a couple years later and liked that one, and then decided to return to her eventually. And I've been really surprised. This is the second film of hers that I've watched this year, like the level of humor in them, because it was not, it's not how I remembered her, and it makes me want to rewatch L'Entrée and Trouble Every Day to see if there are any funny parts in those films, because I remember those films are like more like horror films than anything else. I don't know if there are any funny parts. There's this one part in Chocolat, and I've mentioned this before, but I just love it so much, where like, this plane has to land near the main people's house, like, because they run out of gas. And this one guy is like really wants to get out of there. And when like this consulate of like African leaders or something like show up on like a truck to like invite them to like lunch at some other time, he like keeps asking them for a ride into town. and the consulate just completely ignores him. like literally like turning their bodies like away from him as he's like talking to them, like in the most goofily obvious way of all time. And then it's like they drive off, like he's still trying to talk to them, and he like jumps on their Jeep and is like holding onto the side of their Jeep as they drive away, and then they just like push him off the Jeep. And he's like standing in the dirt, and he's tried to be like, this was all cool, but he was totally ridiculous. I don't know. I did not think of Claire Denis as like a funny director, but I really kind of do now.
Yeah, I really, this made me really want to watch I Can't Sleep, since that's like another like earlier movie that I've heard is kind of like funny and strange, and it has a great cover.
It makes me want to watch Friday Night, which I hear is about gay men cruising. So no longer homoerotic, just straight up homosexual. Well, no more of this pussyfooting around.
That's true.
I don't really have anything else to say. Does anyone?
No, I think we've pretty much covered Beau Travail.
Yeah. Pretty thoroughly. Thought it was interesting. It was just a small moment super early on, but in Galouf's narration, he's talking about being like unfit for life and also unfit for military life. And I thought it was interesting, like the way that most people would think of military life as like the other. But, I mean, he says unfit for life, and then he says an unfit for civil life, so he's, like, referring to regular life as military life. Like, military life is just, like, regular, and then civil life is the other, as opposed to... I instinctually twisted it in my head as I was telling the story, because, for me, military life is the weird one, not civil.
Yeah, I think my response to that is that just like there are a couple of inversions, I guess, in this film that are important. Like, typically, sexual expression causes perversion in a film, and in this case, sexual repression is what sort of perverts Galoop's character, and he's, you know, opposite in that other way that you just mentioned as well, and that he's like, having his entire life like regulated for him is like way more comfortable than having freedom.
What do you do when no one tells you what to do?
Yeah. You dance like a maniac. Yeah, I'll read this one thing that Jonathan Rosenbaum wrote that is really good, and then maybe we can wrap it up. See, talking about that scene at the beginning that Patrick was talking about, these playful pecking riffs, this is the little like air kissing song, which are like little laughs as well as kisses, mock the very notion of a mating ritual, which in effect means mocking in advance Galoop's melodramatic romantic obsession with Sintan and all the turmoil it produces, and implicitly they mock his doomed and equally absurd love affair with the French Foreign Legion.
Nice. Let it go, J-Bomb.
And just like all of Jonathan Rosenbaum articles, it ends, that's the last line, it ends right when it starts to get really interesting.
we lost like the last part of what you said there. But.
Yeah,
you totally broke up.
I said that like all Jonathan Rosenbaum articles, it ends right as I'm starting to get really interested in it. He always he starts off really slow, and then right as he starts to ramp up to the part that I find really interesting, he's like, that's it, that's the end.
Enjoy the movie.
Well, this is kind of a short one. We can wrap it up. You guys want to play the game again?
We can end it with a game. We can have started it with a game and end it with a game.
You guys want to do it again?
Yeah. I mean, we're right at an hour. We're a little
over. Let me take Sandra Bullock's name off the list and then randomize it again. Let's hope it's... And we'll have Basil go first this time because he won last time. Uh-oh. No, this is a really bad one.
I don't know.
Do you want me to do it again, or do you want to do it?
Do it again.
Okay. It's one of the ones that the only movie I know is the one from the list last year. Okay, this one's much better. All right, Basil, it's James Franco.
James Franco. All right, I will start with Spider-Man 2.
Marcia?
Wizard of Oz.
Everything is frozen.
That's not the name of the movie.
What is it called? Like, Legends of Oz. Ozzy McOz.
You gotta give that the title of the movie.
I saw this movie, too. I don't know. Ozspace.
So did I.
Let me go with Pineapple Express.
Basil just said Spider-Man 2. Build off of that.
Let me go with Pineapple Express then.
Okay.
Oz the Great and Powerful.
That's the one. Well, I'll just go. Wait, he's in Spider-Man, right? He's in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll just go with Spider-Man.
I'll say Spider-Man 3.
Dang, he's been in like everything. No, I'm out. I know he's really? Been in a million things.
Really?
I'm serious. It's the time pressure.
He is in the 127 hours? Is that, I'm trying to remember the exact number.
Yep. 127. That is the numbers of hours.
This is the end.
Spring Breakers.
Oh, that's right. He directed himself an adaptation of William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying.
Isn't it As I Lay Dying?
That's what I said. As I Lay Dying.
Oh, I heard Am Dying.
No. As I Am Dying.
As I Do Die.
I Do Be Dying.
Now I Done Did Die.
Oh my gosh, what was that movie called? Dang it, there's this like... I've completely forgotten James Franco movies now. Was he in On the Road? Or was that somebody... Wasn't he in that? Ruben, you saw that one, didn't you?
No.
I don't remember him in it. He's in Milk. He's in Milk, also. Forgot about that.
Okay, I don't know for sure, but I believe you.
Yeah.
He's definitely in Milk.
I know he is, even though I have not seen it. I might be out, too. I can only think of... I'm like, 30 Rock!
Yeah, 30 Rock.
Yeah. Bunch of TV.
I might have to check whether or not this was like a Showtime movie or something, but he was in Dean, the James Dean movie. He played James Dean.
That makes sense. I can see that.
Do Showtime movies not count?
I don't know. Someone who's out want to check that?
Yeah, I'll check, but
that might not even be the right title. I think it's called Dean, but it might just be called, like, the James Dean story or something.
Apparently it was a... Oh, wait, never mind. Let's see if I can actually find it. Oh, yeah, it's called James Dean, and it was a TV movie.
Okay.
So, do we not want to go with TV movies?
No, we don't normally count TV movies.
Plus, he got the title wrong, so it doesn't matter either.
Yeah, he got the title wrong.
Get it
out. James Dean. Man. I feel like he's in every Judd Apatow movie, but he's not.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I was like,
it's Jason. Oh, man, there's one I forgot that I wish I hadn't, but...
Jason Segel is the one who's in every Judd Apatow movie of the Freaks and Geeks crew. I guess I'm out. That was my last one.
Way to go, Patrick.
Patrick's
oh,
the winner.
I actually won that one? I didn't have another one.
Well, you don't have to do it twice in a row in order to get it. You just have to be the last one.
Yeah.
He's in Date Night, and he's in...
I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
I saw it, but...
I wouldn't have thought of it, but I knew that he was in it.
He's in The Green Hornet, and also Green Hornet. Big one is, like, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. He was, like, pretty much the main character.
Oh, right. That's... I forgot about that movie.
I didn't see that.
He's also in...
I should have thought of Homefront, though.
In the new one, also?
Homefront, I definitely knew that he was in.
I don't even know what that movie is.
It's the movie where he's like a crazy southern meth dealer, and Jason Statham is like a retired cop hunting him down.
Nice.
Does it turn into a buddy cop movie?
Oh my God, no.
Dang it.
Frozen Forever.
He also wrote and is in the new Gia Coppola movie, Palo Alto.
Palo Alto. But I didn't know
that. I
actually
want to see
until I looked at this.
And he plays Ginsburg in Howl. I knew about that because it looked terrible.
Yeah.
But I forgot it.
Yeah, he's been in even more movies than Sandra Bullock because he makes like 3 movies a year.
Yeah.
And gets like several PhDs. What a weirdo.
And makes terrible, terrible performance art.
Yeah, I don't know about him and his paintings and his Cindy Sherman knockoffs.
I'm perfectly okay with this, podcast turning into a trash James Franco session. The one thing about Spider-Man 2 that doesn't
Spring
really
Breakers,
work
though.
For me. Yeah.
Oh, Patrick's out.
Okay. Well, we all say bye at the end, yeah. So I guess Patrick won't be saying bye with us. But thanks for listening to the podcast, and you know, if you like it, go on iTunes and I don't know, buy a CD or something. What do they have on iTunes? They have movies, right?
Listen to Go watch a movie. Movies. The all one right. We're stealing all our games from.
Yeah. Go watch this movie. It was a good one. Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. And see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Marsha.
Hey, no problem.
Oh no. Oh well. Bye to my recording. And I'll just include myself swearing at my computer while my internet doesn't work. That you guys couldn't hear. Well, I was like, you fucking piece of shit, why is the internet not working?